Good afternoon. Such a nice setup. I feel like just putting one of your favorite movies and just come join you. We have an hour and a half, don't we? Can just do that. Let me just start with my introduction. I'm Bhargav Shukla. I am current Exchange MVP. Come from a technology background of about 17 years. I currently work for Kemp Technologies. Come from Microsoft. Before Microsoft, I worked in quite a few places, pharmaceuticals industry, cable industry, other verticals. Worked on a lot of different technologies as well. However, Exchange has been my core from the beginning, and I did pick up Link along the way a while ago. So I picked up Exchange and Link Certified Master certifications, which it's kind of a bittersweet moment for that one, having that exclusivity now that that program is gone. But at the same time, having worked so hard, it's sad to see that program's gone. The topic for today, we're going to talk about integration between Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. It's a 200-level overview session, just setting the expectations as we start. It's not going to be the death by PowerPoint. I have woven enough demos in there to actually show what the integration points are and what it looks like. So hopefully you'd like the content. Let's start with architecture of what basically goes underneath to make this integration work between these different products. What the integration looks like, starting with all the 2013 wave of products, SharePoint, Exchange, and Link 2013, you have OAuth as a foundation, and that enables the server-to-server authentication on behalf of user, lighting up a lot of scenarios that we have here between e-discovery, that's combining the data from SharePoint, Exchange, and Link. You have the site mailboxes allowing you to collaborate while keeping the data where it's supposed to be, either in SharePoint or in Exchange. You have unified contact store, so your contacts from Link aren't stored in its own database. Rather, it shows up in Exchange as a contact list. Presence, so when you're logged into SharePoint and somebody sent you some document, you're looking at it, you want to contact them, you can just see right there if that person's busy or available. And voicemail, if you have Link with Enterprise Voice, you have someone calling you and you're unable to take the call, you're leaving a voice message. The person calling you is leaving a voice message. It shows up in Outlook from Exchange, transcribing the message, attaching the WAV file. If it's not properly translated, you can still hear it, but for most part, it translates it properly and you can just read the message and decide what to do with voicemail, just read it and delete it. So quite a few integration points and all enabled with the OAuth foundation. So how many of you had pleasure reading the bedtime reading of OAuth framework, what it looks like, what the framework calls out? I'd be very surprised if you actually read that. But there are two different standards. So I just want to call out that distinction that when you talk about OAuth, it's different from OATH, OAuth. OAuth is a reference architecture compared to OAuth, which is actually a standard that different working members of the group agreed on and are going to use so that they can provide the common set of interfaces for authentication. Microsoft uses the adaptation of that, which is MSXAuth, which is basically the extensions of OAuth protocol that is unique to Microsoft products. So some extensions on top of the standard used in all these different products to work together. What OAuth is supposed to be is it's a server-to-server authentication. So if you think about Link user logging into Link and then looking up some information, or SharePoint user logging into eDiscovery Center and running the search across SharePoint and Exchange to get the data under a single pane of view, the server has to run some tasks on behalf of the user. So server is sending the task over to Exchange, let's say, from SharePoint. SharePoint has to authenticate on behalf of user to Exchange server and say, hey, give me this data. Depending on the user that the server is authenticating on behalf of, you get the relevant data based on the permissions. So it's not open to all kind of server-to-server setup. However, it lays the foundation between those servers so that they can authenticate to each other without user having to repeatedly authenticate across different platforms before they can get the data they need to have access to. This did not exist before, well, the standard may have, but the functionality did not exist before the 2013 wave of products. So you see that coming into 2013 platforms. Well, that's just the graphic showing you what it looks like, but there is another slide coming up that shows it in a better way, so I'll skip that. The way it works between Exchange, SharePoint, and Link is you basically have to set up trust between the three platforms by running set of commandlets, and I'll go through details a little bit later. But as you establish that trust between these servers, now you have server, let's say Exchange, trusting SharePoint. The direction that the trust in, the other direction is where the data flows. So Exchange is trusting SharePoint. SharePoint can query data from Exchange mailboxes and extract that information, present it to the SharePoint user. You want a different direction, you are going to set up trust in the other direction as well. So you're going to set up this trust, run this commandlet in three different places, Exchange, SharePoint, and Link, depending on what integration points you want to light up. The authentication, once you have the trust established, is carried out by the tokens. What you have is self-issued tokens. So there are different ways you can go about the tokens. You can have a trusted third party issue the tokens, something like Active Directory, ADFS, and so on. Or you could do the self-issued tokens, where server creates the token on behalf of the user, passes it on to the server that's going to look for the information. And because explicit trust is created between the servers, you can just say, well, if I self-issue the token, that's not a security issue because I have explicit trust that had to be created. Somebody created that trust. It's already trusted servers. Each application has a unique OAuth certificate. And if you have noticed when you install Link, for an example, when you're going through the setup and creating the certificates as part of the wizard, what you would notice is there are different certificates you have to create. One of them is OAuth certificate. Same for Exchange. Now, in Exchange, you don't have the similar setup as Link. So what you see is a self-issued certificate is created on Exchange for OAuth. And for each application, as you set up the trust, what you're connecting to is a metadata URL for each platform. It's unique to each platform. It's well-defined. So applications don't have a way to change that to, instead of, let's say, metadata JSON 1 for Link 2013, you can't, as an admin, say, well, I want it to be a something different. You can't do that. It's set URL. It's unique to each application. And the other application is expecting to connect to that URL. What the workflow looks like is, let's say a user is running a query against SharePoint, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to find out certain information that resides both in SharePoint and Exchange. Now, I don't have link on this slide for a reason. Link does not, well, SharePoint does not go to link to have that information extracted. You have ability to integrate Exchange with link, so your archival can reside in Exchange. And that's why when you do the e-discovery, your search goes to SharePoint, SharePoint queries Exchange if needed. And since link is storing information in Exchange, it also retrieves that data. Anyhow, the workflow looks like a query coming from a user. The first thing that SharePoint server would do is create the token that it's going to use to authenticate against Exchange on behalf of the user. So you see the token created on SharePoint. That information then is passed on along with the query that needs to be executed to Exchange server. Exchange server then is going to validate the user, verify the permissions they have on the resources, and return the results of the query based on the scope of the user has access to. And then in return, what SharePoint does is in the parallel, it would have run its own query and have its own set of results. It would combine the set of results and surface that in SharePoint portal. So when you go to eDiscovery portal, when we do the demo, I'll show you, you would be able to see both the SharePoint and Exchange data all in one place. Configuration. Like I said, each product needs to be configured depending on what trust you want to establish, which functionality you want to light up. So what we will do is go by a particular product. Exchange, the first thing you do with Exchange is set up auto-discover. You have to set up the auto-discover URL, assign it the valid certificate instead of the default built-in self-signed certificate, self-issued certificate. Assign proper permissions with RBAC to the users who are going to perform the functions, whether it's e-discovery or whatever else. And to use the functionality on the client side, you need Outlook 2013. It has to be the Pro Plus Q, because that's the only one that actually supports the site mailboxes. A link, you need the OAuth certificate. This is relatively simpler because when you install link and when you go through the wizard, you would have set up the OAuth certificate already. So that's not really an extra step, but it has to be in place. And then you have to run the configuration we're going to cover in the next few slides. SharePoint, again, similar setup. You have to have the certificate. You have to have your application set up. But on top of that, there is one extra step, which is that first bullet. You have to install the Exchange Web Services API, because that's how it is able to make calls to Exchange and extract the data out of the mailboxes as needed. You need to install that on all the web front-end servers. So starting with Exchange, assuming the prerequisites we talked about are in place already, what you're going to do is run the scripts provided with Exchange and call appropriate parameters. So what we are going to do is change to Exchange scripts first because that's where the script is located. I just noticed some of the quotes are misplaced, so I'll correct that. But if you're referring to that and are going to use it, just account for those misplaced quotes. So switch to the scripts directory. The easiest way, if you're in Exchange Management Console, Management Shell, is to cd $x scripts. And that's already configured to take you to the right place. Once you get there, run the Enterprise Partner application. You're trying to trust SharePoint in this example. So what you're going to do is call the unique URL we talked about for SharePoint. Point to that. Define the application type is SharePoint, and just run that command. That would take care of the rest. That's trusting the server. Now the trust is established with SharePoint. You have to then add the users to your the RBAC configuration that we talked about. Add users to eDiscovery management role group. That role group allows you to run the eDiscovery searches on Exchange mailboxes. This is where users coming from SharePoint are also going to perform that function. The function's being performed on Exchange, so you have to give that permission. Simply run the commandlet or from AD add the users to that group. Next one is trusting the link server. If you want to have the link integration, you're going to run the same script, the partner application script. You're going to define the URL for link this time. So again, that's the unique expected URL. It doesn't change. Just substitute your host name in the brackets with the front-end pull, assuming it's an enterprise deployment. If it's a standard edition, you just point it to the server name and define that the application type is link. Relatively straightforward. There isn't much going on here. It's just you're establishing the trust and assigning the permissions. The last one is OWA integration. This is a little bit challenging. Challenging not because it's difficult, it's really straightforward steps. What you're doing is you're allowing, first of all, in OWA virtual directory, you're allowing instant messaging, configuring, you're telling that the type is OCS. Well, it's link, but it's not changed from the previous day. So you just call it OCS, it accounts for link. Edit the OWA web config, where what you have to do is you have to take the certificate thumbprint from link. The certificate that link is going to present to you, you have to take that thumbprint, put it in the web config file. And the last one is you set the OWA mailbox policy. Now, the difficult part that I was talking about earlier is every time you apply a CU or service spec to Exchange, it's going to wipe out that value in the web config file. So you will have to remember to put that value back in every time you apply the CU or service spec. Now, of course, that can change in future. This stands true today, but if it changes in future, it's all for good, right? How many of you actually are bitten by this, where you applied the CU and then it just stopped working and you were just scratching your head, what's going on? Happens to me every time in the lab. I know what I have to do, but the thing is, it's just pain. Anyhow, moving on, Exchange is done. Everything's configured from SharePoint to Link. You're trusting that. You're assigning the permissions. That's all done. Now you're moving on to Link, having Link trust Exchange, right? So you're setting the OAuth config, again, the reverse direction. The CS OAuth configuration commandlet, of course, this is link, so you're going to drop down into link management shell, run this commandlet from there, define the auto discover URL, point to the auto discover URL. One thing you have to remember here is we are all very used to autodiscover/autodiscover.xml. Make note that it's not XML that you're pointing to for OAuth. You're pointing it to SVC, different file. Beyond that is just run the commandlet. It would know where to look for the auto-discover. Once that's done, you configure Exchange as a partner app. Run the partner application commandlet. This is not a script unlike Exchange. Just run the commandlet, give it the full application trust level. Now, when you give it the application trust level full, that doesn't mean everybody has all kind of access, right? Like I was saying earlier, the application access is still decided by the user who's accessing the data and what permissions they have on the application they're accessing. So for an example, if you're going from link to Exchange to look up contact card information, or your contact store is in Exchange, you're trying to access that. It's going to see you as a user and it's going to see, well, you have access to your mailbox in this location. That's the only place where you can extract data from. So even if the application trust level is full, that doesn't mean you will be able to just go and extract data from anywhere. All right. Next, if you want the discovery search to be integrated, like we talked about earlier, where you just go to one place in SharePoint, run the discovery, and find relevant data from both Exchange, Link, and SharePoint, you want to enable archiving. So when you enable archiving, the first step is to enable archiving globally, defining what you want to archive. Do you want to archive IAMs only, or IAM and web conferencing? So when you're multi-party conference and people are typing away, you want to archive that as well. You just pick the one that you want to define as your global policy. Enable Exchange archiving, and then in the next step, you're going to set the actual policy that is going to apply to the users. So that's two different steps. First one is enabling archiving at the org level. The next one is the policy that's going to be applied to individual users. So you can have multiple policies, certain policies applied to one set of users, certain policies applied to another set of users. In this example, of course, we're using the global and assuming that that's applied to everyone. It doesn't have to be, just an example. But so configure the policy, set your archiving to true. You have ability to control whether you want to archive only internal communications between your employees or you want to archive internal and external communications where partner communications are also captured. If you're enabling the external archiving, you should have some communication in place where partners are notified that the communication is going to be archived. It's a disclosure that sometimes is optional, sometimes is mandatory, depending on the industry you're working on. Just be cognizant of that. The next one is from link side, you're trusting the SharePoint server. This is for the presence integration. This one is not straightforward. So what you have to do is you have to take a PowerShell script from the TechNet article. It's basically just the text you have to copy from there, but it's a PowerShell script you have to take. Alter the metadata URLs to match your SharePoint and Exchange URLs. The metadata strings are going to be same based on the platform, but the unique name that you're going to access is unique for each deployment. So you have to change that as you copy the script, save the script, edit the metadata URLs, and then run it. Voicemail integration, where people calls link, gets dropped into voicemail, shows up in Exchange. The steps, if you compare it to 2010, it's relatively simpler. However, again, like I made a funny reference here, it still doesn't fit in the slide, but the steps are relatively simple. You have to configure whether you want to have the communication between Exchange and Link in encrypted mode or not. That's the choice you're going to have to make. And once you configure that, when Link makes a call to Exchange, Exchange UM will pick up for the relevant user, transcribe the message, and then put it in the mailbox. Configure OWA integration. For OWA integration, if you remember before, you had to install the Exchange, Exchange API on Link servers. That's not needed anymore. For OWA integration, all you do is run these commandlets. Trusted application, just like we did for SharePoint earlier. You create a trusted application. Once you create the trusted application, enable the topology. That's the important part, because when you do that, that's when it pushes the configuration out to your servers, and then they will basically take effect. It's relatively simple, however, it's easy to forget to enable the CS topology, so that's why I just wanted to pause and make sure that's driven home. One question that I had from my previous session on the same topic was the port that we define here, 5199. Is that the port Link will talk to Exchange with? No. it's the port that actually is where the application will listen on link server. So it's not the firewall rule that you have to change. It's the port where it will listen on. So when you create the trusted application, the port you define is where it would listen for the communication going to OWA or coming from OWA when user logs into OWA, and then you see that small icon light up with your presence, it's going to make a call into Link, and that's where this port will be used internally by Link, not by OWA connecting to Link. Configuring SharePoint, you're configuring the token issuer, same concept as Exchange and Link trusting SharePoint. You're creating that trusted endpoint. You're saying, this is where you're going to connect. That's my OAuth provider endpoint. And the name, right? Name is for your identification, whatever the friendly name you want to give it. There is no specifics there. And once that is done, now you're actually trusting them. The next point is configure permissions. If you notice, it's the same repeating pattern. Only the commandlets are different, but it's the same repeating pattern. Make sure the URLs are configured. Make sure you have the trust. So the first step is establish trust, assign the permissions, and at that point, your integration is done. Only in certain areas, you have to configure some extra steps, which we saw in the link slides. Okay, so configure the permissions. You have to, again, run the script, which you have to download from TechNet, so it's not provided like Exchange with the install itself. With that, at this point, you're all set with the three platforms, trusting each other, having the right permissions in place, and then you should be able to start using your integration features. So what we are going to do now is, this is the boring part. Boring part is done. Now we are going to talk about integration, where I'll show you the demos, actually. So the first one is site mailboxes. How many of you actually use site mailboxes? It's going to be difficult seeing through these lights, but I see a few hands. That's good. If you're Office 365 customer, it's already enabled, whether you're using it or not. You just have to take a couple extra steps to enable it. But the way it works with site mailboxes is you go in SharePoint, the site where the information is stored that you want to share with your group, you're going to enable the app for the site mailboxes. Once you enable that app on that site, SharePoint will make a call to Exchange, create the site mailbox, and enable the integration. What will also happen is you're creating the site mailbox, you have permission to it, you're going to have permission to that mailbox. Your Outlook, after its auto-discover cycles, will pick up this mailbox and it will start showing it in your Outlook. So you will see that mailbox there. Now you have one place for your documents and emails, right? You're sending an email, you're working on a project, you created a site in SharePoint, you started putting documents there. You started sending emails to people related to that project. You want to keep everything in one place. So what you do is, in Outlook, you're able to see that as a mailbox, site mailbox. You're sending an email from that mailbox. People going to the SharePoint site are able to see that information. And from within the mailbox, if you have a document that you have uploaded to SharePoint site, it's going to show up in your documents folder within that mailbox that shows up in your Outlook. So everything is accessible from one place, whether it's Outlook or whether you're going to SharePoint. However, so if I switch over to this slide, the content, while it looks like everything is in one place, the content is only placed where it belongs, which means if you're in Outlook, you're going to that mailbox and you're uploading a document in there, it's not going to keep that document in your mailbox storage in your Exchange server. It's going to upload that document into SharePoint, and in Exchange, in the mailbox, it's just going to be a link. It's just going to be converted to a link, right? So you can see the document, you can click the document will open, but it will open from SharePoint site. The other very important aspect of that is provisioning lifecycle. How many of you have public folders that you cannot get rid of? Okay, quite a few hands. Now raise your hand if that's because you don't have a provisioning lifecycle you can assign to it. You don't know the owner, or nobody can say whether those documents are needed or not, what project it's tied to. That's a big challenge, right? That's why you can't get rid of some of that data, because you just don't know whether that data is important or not, what its lifecycle should be. Since you're using SharePoint here in this example, your SharePoint, when you create that site, you can assign the expiry date, right? When you assign the expiry date, whoever the administrator of that site is will be reminded when that site is about to expire. They have to manually go in and extend it. If you don't extend it, it will go into Tombstone, which is, it will stay in SharePoint, but it will be disabled. You would still be reminded as an admin to do something about it. And if you don't, at the end of that second cycle, it would be deleted, right? So your provisioning lifecycle now manages your data. You don't have like the data piling on, you don't have the documents, just it doesn't become a dumping ground if the tools are used right. So with that, let's jump into demo and let's show you what it looks like. So the most familiar interface, I think for most of us, is logging into your Outlook, right? At least for Office 365, it's easier to go to SharePoint if you're logged on to OWA. You can just go to Sites. Now, if this is on-prem implementation, you are basically going to the SharePoint site directly instead of just jumping through somewhere else that you know. You're in SharePoint. You as a user are starting to work on a new project. So let's create a new site for our new project. Right. Doesn't take much longer, it just takes a little bit less than a minute, I think. So there we go. Now we have that new site that we just created. Besides assigning the permission, and I'm going to skip over that part because you know how to assign the permissions, relatively simple. Just go to site settings and assign whoever needs to have access to that site content. Sorry, I might be going a bit too fast. So the step we talked about for Site Mailbox is to add the application. So as you created that site, as it catches up, okay, so here's, please cooperate, Mr. Demo. So here's the site, sorry. As we go back to the site, you would notice all the different apps you can add to your site for collaboration. One of them is keep your mail in context. That's the site mailbox, right? That's the site mailbox functionality. So what you're going to do is add that to the site that you just created. And now you have it available to you. That doesn't mean it did everything it needs to create the mailbox in Exchange and so on. You click on it, and that's when it will actually start making things, setting things up in Exchange and SharePoint. And so at this point, it's doing, as we talked, making calls to Exchange, creating that site mailbox. And in a few seconds, when it's done, we'll be able to then see it in Outlook if we refresh the auto-discover. Of course, you have to wait for that auto-discover cycles to complete. And how many of you trust that auto-discover to kick in almost immediately? It never does. It usually takes a few hours. So we're not going to wait for that. I have another site that I have already set up. So I'll show you what it looks like in Outlook. But in here, we'll just let it go. I will let it do its thing. What we are going to do is now switch over to Outlook. In Outlook, you see all these, your own mailbox, other things that you have access to, your online archiving. One of them you see here is my Mac demo. This is what I created when I was at Mac. So we already have that. That's another site I created and then added the mailbox in there. It shows up here, right? So what you see is you see the inbox, you see the documents. What we are going to do is go to documents first, and let's see if there are any documents on the site that are already uploaded that I can look at. So there is a document. I look at the document, I open it. Just like you would expect, waiting for my Excel to cooperate with me so I can bring it over. But what you should see, the expected outcome is, it gave me some error, but the expected outcome is that file would just open in your relevant program, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, whatever the file type is. That's what you should see when you open it. Now, if you look at the emails, there are no emails sent to this box yet, except the default email that came out when you created the site, the default that you can send email to this address. So what I'm going to do is send an email to that site with an attachment. So what we're going to do is I'm going to find a document. I'm going to basically take the PowerPoint that I'm presenting and just attach that, upload it. The other thing, while we wait for that mail to go and get processed and show up here, the other thing we can do is I want to take the same presentation and put it in SharePoint. So what I'm going to do is just drag that and put it straight into the Documents folder, right? When I go to Documents, what you would notice is you have the document, it's showing in italics, just like the Outbox. When you look at Outbox and you see that mail is still being processed, being sent, that's what it's doing. What it's doing at this point is it's basically uploading the document to SharePoint. It's going to show up in the SharePoint site. So we'll let it go. It'll take a little bit. If we switch back to this, that mailbox has been created, the one that we just created. It's all set up. We can go back to our SharePoint site. And what I can do is I actually can open the other site where we just uploaded that document. Okay, I'll have to find the right URL for that. But in the meanwhile, this is where you have your keep email in context. You already created that. It went through its process. What shows up basically is a mailbox right there on the side. And when you click on that, it will take you to your mailbox. As expected, it will drop you to the Outlook, or, well, Outlook web app, right? So since it's a new mailbox, you're going to select your time zone, and then it will take you to your OWA. This is all configured. Even if it was on-prem, it's all configured when you set up the integration. It knew what the auto-discovery is, where to find your mailbox, what URL is going to be to connect to. And then you just got your new email, right? Eventually, what you would expect is eventually that mailbox will show up right here, just like the Mac demo mailbox. So now we have it. You have the mailbox. It shows up here. You go back to your SharePoint site. If I was to upload a document from Outlook, it would show up here. Let me see if I can. Now, if you were to take, so the other thing that I wanted to show you is as we go to this, now let's say you have a team member who is going to work with you on this project and you want to send them a document. What you're going to do is you're going to take the document and send them a new email to our friend Alex. You just drag the document and drop it in here. Now, what you usually expect is when you drag and drop the document, you're going to see the attachment of the document. But instead, you drag that document from the site mailbox. It automatically knows it's somewhere on the SharePoint, where it belongs, what the URL is, and it converted that to the name with the link. So now, when you send this, the user, assuming the user who's receiving this has permission, would just click on the link, go to SharePoint, log in, and they would get their document, right? Data belongs where it should. The documents belong in SharePoint, emails belong in the mailbox, the shared mailbox that is used by team. So as you assign permissions on SharePoint, it would also translate to the mailbox. So right now, we created a new site, only I have permission to it. But when I add someone else from my team to that SharePoint site, it would also assign permission to that mailbox, and their Outlook, if it is 2013 Pro Plus, will start showing that site mailbox in there automatically. You don't have to do anything there. All right. Like it? Can you get rid of your public folders now? It's not going anywhere, is it? Okay. E-discovery, what does that look like? Let me make sure we're good on time. Yes. E-discovery. E-discovery is where you have your legal department coming at you. You have your lawyers coming at you and asking for certain information. We have a case. We need to find certain items that contains XYZ. How easy is it if you have worked with those cases before? What does it look like, the process? What do you have to do? Beyond, of course, the regular bringing the tapes, restoring the data. Assuming data is in the right places, what's the discovery process like? Not considering this e-discovery combined with Exchange and SharePoint. It's a manual process, isn't it? So with this, what you're going to do is, integration points are already talked about. We know it's integrated and you can just log on to SharePoint. What it's going to look like is the e-discovery portal where you can create new cases, right? You can create multiple cases. This screenshot shows you a case called Test Case 1. What you see there is you see multiple things, including the e-discovery sets. So you could have a single case with multiple points of discovery. You have to find confidential, you have to find Contoso, you have to find Project X, right? You can create multiple discovery sets first. The first step is to define the scope, where to search and what to search. So you are going to define search in email box of Alex, search in SharePoint site of sales. Once you define that, it would show you the preview, which is on this side. It shows you the preview of what data it found that matches your query. You can also decide to put that particular data on hold, right? So it's granular instead of putting entire mailbox on hold. And then the next one is search and export. So now you found the data that you needed. You need to provide it to someone. You go to search and export, and export the data out. It basically gives you a PST file that you can download. In the process, however, you will have to use IE, of course, and download. It will just give you option to install that plugin, which allows you to then export the data. I'll be able to show you some of that, not necessarily the download, but we'll see. So we jump back here. We want to go to eDiscovery, so you go to the URL for eDiscovery. And this is the fun of SharePoint. It has everything, but you need to know where you have to go. There is no one single map that you can navigate from. And there might be, I'm a little bit ignorant on SharePoint side, so if I'm saying something wrong about that map, just forgive me. So what we have is we're on the eDiscovery, well, actually we are not on eDiscovery portal as I expect. No, this is not it. Okay. My bad. Okay, there it is. So you're on the Legal Discovery Center. You see a bunch of cases on your left-hand side. And then you can create a new case if you want to. So depending on what you want to do, you have an existing case and you're trying to extract the information or just create a new one. So let's go ahead and create a new one, see what it looks like. Decade, you give it a name for your case, eDiscovery case. You scroll down and give it a couple more things. And then create. Now when it's created, you're presented with that particular case. So you're now inside that case with your discovery set, search and export. The first thing, of course, is to define what you want to search and where you want to search. So let's go ahead and create that. What we want to find is confidential. The word confidential mentioned in your emails or in the documents uploaded in the SharePoint site. Where? Let's pick a couple of mailboxes. And then a site where your documentation is stored. So the document that you think were being worked on this project were located on this particular site, right? Okay. And now we have all your scope defined. This is the site where I want to look for the documents. This is the mailboxes where I want to search for this particular information, a set of information. And if you notice, you have more granular controls. You can define your start and end dates, author, sender, if you know that information. And just after you said okay, you noticed it just spinned for a little bit and it shows there are 8 items that it found. Right, so that's interesting. It's a preview. You already know, even without diving deeper, that you have some information that's already found. It gives you a preview of what's found. And at that point, you can either enable in-place hold or not do anything about it. Right, so the information that's found, I want to retain that information because the case is ongoing. Just enable the in-place hold and save it. So now your discovery set is saved. You don't see anything happening. Okay, there we go. So now your discovery set is saved. You can create more discovery sets as you need. You can combine your search items into single query if that's what you want. And the next one is search and export. So in the search, now this is the same search as before. However, in here, if you notice, the sources are already defined. We did that earlier in the previous step, right? So you have these two mailboxes, you have your SharePoint site, and if you click on that, it would show you a preview of what it found with that information. When you're ready, you can go ahead and save or export. When you do the export, if everything works as expected, remove duplicates. There are a couple other options that you have. The beauty of it is not only it shows you the number of items it found even before you export it, it tells you what the size is going to look like. So if you're running a search and the Exchange server is in a data center that's somewhere else and you have a slow bandwidth connection, you may want to delay that download when you get to a better place. And then at that point, it's just clicking OK and waiting for the download to initiate. It would ask you for the plugin. So you can download the results. And there it is. Even before I can actually click on it, what it did actually is it basically asked you to download the download manager, the component, the plugin that is actually going to download that item for you. And then it's asking you to log on so it can download that information for you. Pretty simple there. Not much that you have to do. Okay. That one's stuck, and that's fine. So that's eDiscovery. Switching back to this. If you have any questions, I would definitely take the questions afterwards, so we'll have time for Q&A. High-res photos. So this is what you had before, but not high resolution. You had the photos. In 2010, you were able to upload the photos. They were stored in Active Directory. When you tried to upload large photos, what happened? 80 bloat. Your 80 guys just screamed at you if you did that. and you had to define the attribute, how big that attribute can get. So you had to work with your 80 guys. What with high-resolution photos, the way it works is in Active Directory, it puts the smaller thumbnail. You see it at the bottom, 48 by 48, in the thumbnail photo attribute. It's just a thumbnail. However, the photo itself, when you upload the photo as a user or as an admin for the given user, it is stored in given user's mailbox. The high-res photo is stored in the Exchange mailbox, and then it's converted into three different versions. Right, the 4848 is for the 80 thumbnail. Then you have 9696, which is used by OWA and Outlook. And then you have the high-res, which is used by Link and Link Web App. So when you're in Link 2013, you're in a meeting, or you're just talking to someone peer-to-peer call, as you're having that call, if you're not using the video, you would see their photo. If they have uploaded the high-res photo, that's what you will see. The way it works is when you're doing an upload, depending on where you're doing the upload from, you're basically going to Outlook Web App or you're logging into SharePoint, and then from there you're updating your own photo as a user. If you're an admin uploading photo for your users, then you're using Shell. So once you upload the photo, depending on the consumer, they would make the call to a client access server. And the client access server will fetch that photo from the user's mailbox, give you the photo, and you will see the photo. So if you're in SharePoint site and you have a team working on a project, you go there and people are chatting, putting information there. You're looking at who's putting that information. You would see that, and you would see the high-res user photo alongside next to them. It won't be the 600, 648, or whatever the size was. It won't be that big photo. That's only used by Link. But you will see the next version down, the second larger photo. So let's see what it looks like. I'm sure this is one thing you probably have already seen. But when you're in Exchange, for an example, and you're looking at someone's email, what you expect is the photo of the person sending you the information. Now, this one is an outside user, if you notice. It's an Outlook.com email. As I was presenting last time, somebody sent me an email. So it shows up here. But you don't see the photo because it's an outsider. You don't have a way to get to their Exchange and fetch the photo. But if I find someone who is in my company, you notice it was gray for a little bit, and then it just flipped over to the photo. It just fetched the photo. It was fetching it for the first time. And then you see at the bottom all these thumbnails as well for everyone included in that email. And then you see the beautiful integration points here. You just hover over that, and it brings over the contact card. Right from there, you can start an IM, start a phone call if you're enabled for that, or you send an email. Anyhow, when it comes to photo, now as a user, I want to change my photo. When I click on that, it's going to take me to OWA, ask me to change the photo. Now, since this is Office 365, the experience is a little bit different. But if you notice, the URL is still an ECP URL, right? So let's go ahead and, okay. It's not exactly coming up on my screen. You click browse, you expect it to ask for the photo, and if the demo wants to play along, now you see that, great. What I'm going to do is go to my pictures and I'm going to pick a photo that looks more like the person should look like. Save. Now you have a photo that's high resolution, you just uploaded it, it's going to go in your mailbox, the person who's uploading it, in their mailbox. When you go to SharePoint site, and this is where that one big difference is, if I have a document, I would see that. Because we just created this, we don't have any documents. Let me find another site. When you go to Exchange or when you go to Link, you're going to see the new photo immediately because that call is made when you basically attach to that user's IM or look at their email. But when you go to SharePoint, the experience is a little bit different. So if I go to one of the sites where the information is from one of these users, yes, okay. So here, I don't have that user. No, we updated Sarah Davis, but you are looking at the photo of someone else. Oh, okay. Right, Sarah Davis, okay. So you notice that it didn't update the photo yet because SharePoint will not update the photo, it will cache it. You will have to just click on that and then it will try to update the photo. The new photo will then show up. And this is a different user, so you can just click change your photo. And now it shows up. You don't have to change it. What will happen is this one will then change to the new photo because you just fetched it. Right? So the experience is a little bit different in SharePoint. It's cached. But otherwise, so if we switch over to Exchange, any of these emails, you're going to notice the photo will change. Not just yet. I'm sorry? Yeah, it's not updated. I was just curious why. But if I pull up Link, you notice it updated automatically as well. So you would expect the same thing to happen in Exchange. Sometimes you know how the demos work. They just don't. but yeah, you notice that it just fetched the photo automatically. So that's the experience you expect in Link and Outlook. Let's switch over to demo again. Well, not the demo, but the next one. So the next one is task synchronization. As you create the sites for your collaboration for a given project, you're uploading the documents, there definitely are going to be times where you need to have the tasks created and assigned. When you create the tasks, in SharePoint you have ability to create the tasks. In Outlook you have ability to create the tasks. Wouldn't it be nice if you see all the tasks in one place? Most commonly Outlook, right? So what you can do there is, first as a user, go to your site, whichever project that you want the tasks from, subscribe to the tasks so that it starts synchronizing for you. There is a timer job that is going to, in the background, run and synchronize with your Exchange. And then when you open your Outlook, it will show up in your Outlook as tasks. So I'll show you what it looks like. The key is user must opt in. It's not by default on. By default, it's off. So your tasks in SharePoint stays there. Your tasks in Outlook stays there. you don't see them across. But once you opt in, you will see your SharePoint tasks in Outlook, and it will fetch your Outlook tasks in SharePoint. And then you can mark any of those tasks as, okay, it's done, and it would reflect that when the synchronization catches up on the other side. So what does it look like? We go back to our sites. Now I want to find one of the projects which we were working on. We just created this project, right? So we go to that project site. Working on it. In the meanwhile, I go to Outlook so I can show you the tasks. You notice the TechEd site that we created showed up here. We didn't have to do anything. We just had to let the AutoDiscover catch up. We didn't have to restart the Outlook. It didn't ask us to do anything like administrator has made a change, none of that. It just showed up, right? You see it at the bottom. If I switch to the tasks, what you're going to see is the tasks here from my own task list from Outlook Exchange. Then you see the Northwind tasks, which is one of the projects on our SharePoint site that I have subscribed to already. And you see new products tasks. New products is another project I'm working on, and it has its own tasks. So when I click on that, what I see is the task, and the task is marked as completed. I go to Northwind, and that has some tasks that needs to be worked on. I could say, well, that's done. And what will happen is, on SharePoint, when the synchronization catches up, SharePoint will reflect the same status. Now, if you go here, what you see is that project site. One of them is Newsfeed. Well, that's not going to show up until I enable the tasks. So in your project sites, if you had the tasks enabled already, it will show up and you will be able to subscribe. If you didn't have that, like I just did, you can quickly add it in your project as a resource. You go to the tasks now that it shows up. And now you can subscribe to it. So what you do is go to tasks up top, and here you have ability, you have an option to sync to Outlook. The other option we didn't talk about is ability to sync with project as well. So if you're the project user, you have the project portal, you have ability to sync the task across that way as well. So let's sync to Outlook. What you're gonna see is it's the opt-in. You're saying, okay, sync my tasks. And once you click okay, it won't be immediate. It won't immediately show up in Outlook. Like I said, it's the timer task that runs in the background on SharePoint, which is going to do the synchronization. So you have to wait for that to finish. But now you're opted in. Now these tasks will show up in your Outlook eventually. You will be able to manage it from one place or the other. Okay, next one. Unified Contact Store. So if you don't have that enabled, the 2010 experience was when you go in Link, when you add people to your list, they are added in your list, which is stored in the database. With integration, what happens now is, by default, UCS is enabled. So if you haven't assigned users a different policy than the default, they would by default inherit that Unified Contact Store. It will be enabled for them. So what will happen is their contacts that they add in Link from the Link interface are going to be put in Exchange in your mailbox. What you will see is in Exchange, in Outlook, you see Link contacts as a folder. You see all the contacts you have added in Link show up there. And then you have some ability to update that contact information if you need to. It's not stored in the Link contact, but it's stored in Outlook and is combined into a single contact card. So what it looks like is you basically make a call from Link to store the contacts. That's the first step. You're storing that. This slide is actually not showing the storing part. But then you're making a call from Outlook client, for an example. You're looking for the contact store. You're just basically going to your mailbox, you're looking at contacts, and you will see the link contacts in there. And if you're using Outlook, then you will see it in the Outlook interface. Same experience, just different portals. So when I switch to link first, you will see I have a bunch of contacts here, right? When I go to Outlook and when I go to contacts, you would notice there is a link contacts folder. And this is exactly the same as what you see in link. As you add more people in link, they would start showing up here. So we have a couple of them. I guess I can add one more. But what you can do is, while this is read-only, the link contacts folder in Outlook is read-only. You cannot delete the contacts from here. Contact management for link contact is done from link client. But you are able to update some of the information. The folder is still read-only, but the information is stored in your mailbox, not in that particular folder necessarily. So what you can do here is, I'm trying to find where, edit. You edit that and you can update any information you need to. And so here the name is the CPURI instead. I would rather change it to what my name is supposed to be, right? You do that. Save it. Okay. And now your contact, instead of showing up like a CPURI, it's going to show up as a name if it saved it correctly. There you go. And what you will notice is in link, it would catch up very soon. So in link, where it says the CPURI, that would change soon as well. If I go to the contact card, you would also notice that change in the contact card. So instead of showing the contact card as a CPURI, it would, when it catches up, it would actually show you the name just like this one. So it allows you to, if you have the contacts that are in your address book in Outlook, and then you have the same contact in your link, it allows you to have that single contact card that is surfaced through this experience. And it's easy for you to manage that because it's surfaced in Outlook instead of doing it from link. Okay, so let's look at the next one. Coming up on pretty much the last ones. The contact store is done, okay. Presence. Presence is the next one. In presence, we saw that already, I believe, but I'll show you anyway very quickly. What happens is link is your authoritative source for information about presence. So anytime you go to SharePoint, you go to Outlook, you go to OWA, and look at the other person's presence, it's basically making a call to link to figure out what the current presence state of that user is. And then it basically just turns around and gives that information back to the client that's asking. So, not a rocket science. What you're going to see is, well, I think it's really easy for me to say it's not a rocket science. You ask the developers, they might tell you something different. I'm sure there is a lot of work that went into all of this, but from the user perspective, it's relatively simple. So, here's our Sarah Davis, right? Here's my link client, and instead of in meeting, I'm gonna say do not disturb. And you see that in the background immediately changing. That's the same experience. Now, of course, in this example, we are logged on everywhere as Sarah, but it still has to do the work to show you that update. We could be logged on as someone else and it would still show you that, but in SharePoint, so if you go to SharePoint somewhere where it shows us that user, and while it's working on it, I'll also go to Outlook. So in Outlook, it will take just a little bit when you log on, and then it'll show up here as your presence info. In here, I could just go to the user, I guess. So this part's always fun. You have to flip back and forth in SharePoint. There is no quick way unless I type. So here in OWA, it shows up with your presence information. If you were sending it to someone, someone was reading your email, they would see it in the email up here, right? So you are sending the email, you will show up here, and your busy status will show up here. Now let's change it from OWA. So from OWA, we are going to set it back to busy. And you would notice the link icon changed in the bottom. This changed here as well. You didn't have to refresh your page in IE, it just updated that present state. And in here, it changed as well. So all the different places, they're pretty much instantaneous. The authoritative sources link. This stuff I call autopilot. We put stuff on autopilot. We assume it just works. Right? The work that we had to do is relatively one-time work. You just set it up and it's done. The only thing you have to remember is web config. Voicemail is, I believe, pretty much the last one, and we're coming on 5 minutes, and then I will be here to answer the questions we have sometime afterwards. So, voicemail, the way it works is Link takes the call, and Link tries to reach the user by ringing all their endpoints, their phone, their Link client, their mobile client. If the user's busy or do not disturb or doesn't pick up for whatever reason, then it tries Exchange. It calls Exchange UM. Integration was done already, so it calls the UM. UM picks up the call. The string is passed that identifies the user, so it goes for that user. Exchange receives the call, accepts the voicemail, transcribes it. The UM component transcribes the message based on the language selections, and there are a lot of different languages available. So it tries to find out which language the person is speaking in based on the languages you have installed for UM, and transcribes the voicemail. Now, if I was to speak in my mother tongue, it wouldn't catch it because that language pack is not available, right? But if I'm speaking English, it would catch that. If I'm speaking one of the other languages that are language pack are available for that, it would transcribe that. And then you would receive an email. What you would see is an email with the transcribed text. You would also have an attachment. So if you can't figure out what transcribed text looks like, if it looks like a bunch of words that doesn't make sense into a sentence, you can just listen to what the person said by opening the attachment. And if you're using the auto-attendant numbers from your phone, let's say you're traveling and you saw this on your phone, you could easily just call that auto-attendant number of Exchange and go into your voicemail. It would basically play the voice message for you. So the play to phone functionality. And the flow that we talked about in an image, right? You have the user called, Link server accepts it, sends it over through mediation to Exchange. Exchange accepts it and transcribes it. What it looks like is right here in Outlook. I have a voice message somewhere here. There is your voicemail. So Alex left me a message. You see the transcribed message. Hey, this is Alex. I'm calling you for blah, blah, blah. You can also see the attachment right there. And because you have Link integration, Outlook is also showing you the number right here. If you were to click that, it would open it in Link and try to call. If you have Enterprise Voice enabled, your call will be established. Okay. And I believe that pretty much sums it up. So if you have questions, I'll take the questions now. If you want to use the mic, that's fine. If you want to come up here, that's fine as well. I think some of these items that it says check out, you have a little bit of time to check out at 3, the Expo Hall closes. So the Garage Series Live is downstairs in Expo Hall. If you haven't checked out, definitely worth checking out. Couple of resources. Evaluation. Of course, Xbox One is nice. The gift cards are great. But on top of all of that, being selfish, it's very important for me to get your feedback, good, bad, ugly. so that I know how to do it better next time. And if I did good, I can just tap myself on the back if you let me know. Barcode will let you do the evaluation straight from here. If you want to do it later, that's fine. Please, please, please complete your evaluations at some point. And I'm open for questions. Thank you.